With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Welcome to the NASCAR NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan. Today here at the Daytona International Speedway Media Center, where it is January 3rd, 2020, but on the third day of the new year, cars already rolling around the track, and it is for the roar before the Rolex 24, the test session leading into one of the biggest sports car races in the world. And one of the drivers that will be watched and featured during this race is Dane Cameron from Team Penske. He's my guest today. Dane, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, so you come back into this race as the defending series champion. You and Juan Pablo Montoya won the championship for Penske last year in the DPI category in IMSA. How's it feel to roll in here where, obviously, it's not the big event yet? That'll be in a few weeks, but the Rolex 24 is such a prestigious big event, and you and JPM come in as top dogs in some ways.
Yeah, it's always a nice way to start the year, no doubt. Kind of feel like you have the target on your back, and the way they kind of do the garages, if you're if you win DP points, then you're kind of first box in the pit. So it's kind of nice to have your little bonus, have your whole little world within a couple of steps between your garage and truck and in pit lane setup. So we had a really great year last year, but in the last 2 years, we've struggled a little bit or had some failures here in the big race in the Rolex. So, and you honestly don't get a ton of practice time when you come back for the race. So now it's really critical to make sure you leave here, you know, feeling satisfied with your prep for that. So we kind of were able to tick that championship box. So now we can kind of move forward to really chasing after those big ticket races here in 2020.
Last year's race here, the Rolex 24 in 2019, was, I thought, Dane, just a little bit of a disappointment because there was all this buildup. It felt like for 16 hours, and then the last 8 hours were just nonstop rain, and it didn't have a lot of racing. And I think you guys had a mechanical that kind of slowed you guys down a little bit too as well, right?
Yeah. We were running fine through the early part of the rain there. I think the second, third kind of thing at one point. And just at that point, you kind of had to stay on the road, and you wanted to stay up near the front where the visibility was still good, and just stay in contention. And then, yeah, we had a mechanical failure with, I'm not even sure, a couple hours left to go that put us towards the back a little bit, which is unfortunate. And then, yeah, I mean, it's never fun for anybody, fans and the rest of us, to sit there with long red flag periods and things like that. But the track was just so inundated with water, we just couldn't really run. You know, you can't pump enough water at that stage, and you're just kind of a passenger. It would have been a better day for boat racing for sure. So it's kind of just another thing that happens here that makes this race so tough to win. And obviously when they ended it early, not that it really played in any factor, but I think in some of the other classes, some shuffling around with when you do pit stops and things like that have dictated some of the outcome of the race win. So definitely not ideal, but yeah, maybe we'll get a little bit luckier here and have some better weather come this year, and we can fight it out.
If I have this correct, is this your 12th try to try to win the Rolex 24?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not to diminish your resume, and it's very stately and very prestigious. You've got a lot of huge accomplishments, but I'm sure you want this one. What makes this race so challenging and difficult to win?
Oh, man. I mean, I think just obviously the length of time, you can't really underestimate how much time it is into the race. And, you know, our normal races are kind of an hour and a half to 2 hours, 40 minutes, and you come here and do a 24-hour consistent race. So just for any car to be, you know, operated at maximum performance for that period of time just stresses everything. You're dependent on your teammates. So obviously, unlike NASCAR or anything else, you've got at least three guys, sometimes four guys in your car. So you're dependent on your teammates to do a good job, for them not to make mistakes. You know, always the 50-cent kind of part failure can always come up and strike at any moment. And because our cars and our championship is always evolving, you can kind of find yourself some years maybe not in the right car kind of thing. So not necessarily just the team, obviously, like you see in other motor racing, but it's almost maybe a little bit more F1-esque in that way, that you need to kind of find yourself in the right brand of car in the right year that has good performance. I've been here and had really great runs with minimal dramas, but just been in a type of car that just wasn't so competitive that year because maybe it was a little bit older or whatever, or something newer had showed up that same year that kind of had some pace on everybody, and been in the right place and in the right car and led lots of laps and kind of had the 50-cent part failure. So you just need so much to go right, not only just from that reliability standpoint, but then you have got to have the pace on top of it these days because it's so frantic here now.
I mean, is it like running qualifying laps for
it really
a full
is
day?
These days? Yeah, really? To be honest, it really is. So the physical
so no
part
breaks.
It, yeah, the physical part has gotten a lot harder lately because normally you could just pace yourself a little bit easier, kind of look after your car, and then everyone would kind of start to push after daybreak. And now everybody wants to be in the lead and lead all the time, and they've changed some rules for lap down wave buys and things like that, so those don't happen as often. So normally if you had an issue and you lost 1, 2, even 5 laps, it was very easy to get those back. But now you can go hours without getting your lap back just because of the way things cycle. So everybody is pushing hard to be leading and to never go behind, because that's the easiest way to protect yourself in a way. So yeah, it really, it's, I guess, maybe cliche to say, but it really is turned into a sprint race in the 12 tries that I've done it here. I've really seen it kind of evolve and the pace of the race evolve.
And is that combination both of talent level of drivers being on the upswing, especially it seems like since the merger, we were talking earlier, some media members here, that it feels like it's really attracted a new caliber of driver. And obviously you now being in this race a 12th time, you've seen how that's changed over several years, and also the depth of the manufacturers and the equipment. Is it just kind of confluence of all those things?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the merger was a great thing for the sport, and you're seeing more high class drivers, and obviously now there's only one place to race, so that directs everybody to here, to this race. Everybody wants to win it to begin with. It's the natural evolution of cars, of, you know, race it, fix it, race, you know, kind of thing. So every year when something breaks, that part is stronger when it comes back the next year. So over a period of time, everything just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. So you're seeing a lot less failures kind of than you normally would here and things like that. And yeah, the game has certainly been raised here in distance records and lap time pace. Everything has gone up. The Michelin tire has increased the pace a lot. So yeah, it's really, really tough to win.
Yeah. And obviously it's 24 hours, which just seems daunting on its face, but maybe for a casual sports fan or casual racing fan, NASCAR fan who doesn't know a lot about IMSA, and I'll plead guilty on this. I mean, I think about IMSA and I think Rolex 24, but this is the only 24-hour race you guys have. And then after that, there's Sebring, and then there's several races that are kind of like in the
1.5 to 2 hour 40 and a 6 hour race. So it's kind of a mix of
different which are referred more to like sprint races, I think, versus endurance.
Sure. Yeah. Just a couple of pit stops, you know, two drivers, one driver change for most of those. You know, we go to a place like Long Beach is a great example there. We go there with IndyCar as well as Detroit with IndyCar, and a 90-minute race. So that's kind of like one pit stop sometimes, one driver change. So it's really kind of one shot to get it right. You know, it's sort of like going to the last stage of a cup race, and it's kind of all to play for, one shot, you know. So that's definitely a lot of a different thing for sure. And I think our schedule is, as you say, NASCAR-esque in that way, where we kick off with the big race that everybody wants to win, you know.
Right.
We start with the 24 hours at Daytona as opposed to the 500. So it's kind of strange to kick off with the biggest one that you really want to win the most from the first one, but it's kind of nice because you can really just focus on this one race, not really have to worry about the rest of the year. You know, all your effort and focus can go into trying to win Daytona, and then once you go from there, you turn the page and get to the rest of the races. So, but yeah, we have a great championship. We do a lot of great road courses, some street courses. You've seen more and more guys, I think, over the last couple of years, obviously with Juan and Elio here with us at Penske and Acura. You know, some IndyCar guys coming, sports car guys from all over the world. So, I think, as you say, the championship is growing and you know, gaining more recognition and more competition all the time.
Is trying to win this race essentially like trying to get every other race on the schedule, like the things you talked about when you have a race with one pit stop or whatever, you need everything to go right. Is this kind of like a combination of all of those other races, and you're trying to get basically like, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 10 sprint races to go exactly right for 24 hours straight?
Yeah, really it is. And that's, I've used that same analogy to try to describe it, because it's like, it's really just hard to put into context how long the car is running compared to one of our normal races, and how many pit stops the guys have to do and all those types of things. So, you know, when you see guys throwing away these short races, that happen sometimes, like you say, that's almost 10 races that have to go perfect for you to win just this one race that pays the exact same amount of points as all the rest of them. So in a way it's good, because if it goes wrong, you're still in contention for the championship. But yeah, if it goes wrong, there's kind of that one shot done for the year. So yeah, it's just so, so challenging to have it go right. And it's really evolved from being, oh, we'll just survive to the end and that'll kind of get us into the top three or four or whatever, to being, not only do we still have to do that, but we have to do that at maximum pace.
So this is year three with Penske?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. Yep. And year three since Penske restarted its sports car program. Obviously, they have a huge history in IndyCar. And I heard you say something I thought was really interesting in the way you kind of explained DPI in sports car. You said it was like IndyCar, but just heavier and with fenders. Is that a good way for...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, there's a lot of similarities. We use carbon composite brake rotors that you see like in IndyCar and Formula One. So the cars are really great on the brakes and prototype. Cars all, you know, purpose built, purpose designed for motorsport for one purpose. So unlike a GT car, which is, you know, going to have some bones from a road car and a street car that's been modified for racing, our cars are built to a rule set basically that exists for this type of racing. And yeah, they're all made out of carbon fiber, kind of a similar center chassis and tub like you would see in an Indy car, things like that. But yeah, obviously the wheels are covered, and you can really see it sometimes if you've ever seen some photos or if you come see us at the track. When the guys are working on the cars, you can really see once they take the fenders off or the nose, and it looks really similar. There's a couple pieces they can take off, I think, under the mirrors and stuff. And then it has a really similar side pod and everything. Then it really kind of starts to see some tie-ins to single-seater type stuff for sure. But yeah, we're I don't know, probably 200 or 300 pounds heavier maybe than in any car, and a little bit less power. But, you know, those weekends that we've shared the track with them, they were only a couple of seconds off the pace now these days, and we have traction control. They don't, things like that. So there's some differences, but yeah, they kind of seem to go more and more in line with single seaters and open wheel cars all the time. And then as the pace gets faster as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. And then of course, big difference again, the fenders, you guys can make some contact.
Yeah.
Not a lot, I presume. Not like a NASCAR short track race.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no dumping guys like at Martinsville for sure, but we can lean on some guys. And for me, I've really enjoyed the racing here. For a while that I've been here now. And yeah, it's IndyCar has great racing and great performance. But yeah, the cars are quite delicate, and sometimes that can hamper the overtaking and in the wheel-to-wheel racing, because you have to protect the car, or if there is any small contact, then one guy's out of the race. So for us, see, the wheels are more protected. So yeah, you can kind of lean on guys a little bit here and there, but still a lot of really delicate aerodynamic pieces that are around the car. And if you damage it, then you start going slower and all that kind of stuff. But it is cool to feel like you can get your elbows out a little bit more and kind of get after it a bit for sure. Yeah. Makes the racing a little more interesting.
So for someone who's a NASCAR fan, you grew up in an area that people probably would know, near Sonoma Raceway,
yep.
Right?
Yeah, a few miles north of the track there, yeah.
And so how does one get from there into top level of sports car racing? Because it seems like at one point you were kind of racing open wheel, maybe yep. more go-karts, and then your path kind of changed.
Yeah, I grew up in the area there, so... it really was a pretty strong, you know, hotbed or growing spot for go-karting. Shifter kart racing was really big in Northern California at that time. And my family has been involved in racing and been involved in open wheel racing and things like that for a long time. So I kind of grew up around that type of racing, and that was really what I knew. And obviously what my dad knew to be able to help me a little bit. I don't even know where the nearest, I think there's a dirt track in Petaluma or something that's on the other side of the hill from the track, but you know, I didn't even know where the nearest oval track was, kind of from where I grew up, hardly. So it was all karting, and then to going from shifter kart racing, kind of next step is kind of your junior formula stuff, which is now, you know, formerly known as Road to Indy. It was kind of in its early inception when I was in single seaters in the mid-2000s. Yeah, and grew up there, and then kind of get to the end of the road there, like a lot of us do, in that it was Formula Atlantic that I was in, but you know, equivalent to Indy Lights, and you kind of run out of money and run out of people to ask for favors, and the budgets are high, and the step to get to IndyCar is even higher, and we kind of were like, okay, well, now what are we going to do? We're kind of stuck, can't afford to keep staying in junior single seaters, can't afford to go to IndyCar really, and there's obviously opportunities are really tough. And I think actually that was 2008, which is when the IRL and Champ Car merger was. So everything was kind of really in flux over there at that time. So it was like, okay, well, this sort of seems like a good time to maybe to switch to sports cars. And my family had just been involved a little bit more in sports cars in that kind of couple of years leading up to that. So I was learning more and more about what it was like over here, and seeing that there was, you know, two drivers a car, so there's a couple more opportunities for guys. And all I really wanted to do was to, you know, earn a living being a race car driver. I wasn't really too fussed on what shape the car was or where it was racing. I wanted somebody to pay me to drive a race car.
Didn't matter which kind.
Yeah, it wasn't. I did want to go to IndyCar and to Champ Car. I really did, because I grew up around it and that's what you saw. And
yeah,
you wanted to get there. Never quite did, but it was like, okay, well, this, I can go here and I can maybe commit to it early and might take a year or two or three or whatever, but it gives me a better shot at having a long career, which is what I wanted. And yeah, it took a couple of years to get to, you know, work your way up through some of the higher teams. And, you know, experience is really valuable here in sports car racing, you know, because of the long races, you have to bring extra guys. So to build a network takes a little bit of time of, you know, meet people to trust you. And it's kind of funny how that works, because you think, oh, I just need to be fast and I'll get the job or whatever. But, you know, here, because you're bringing somebody new in or somebody extra in, they need to have some level of trust and confidence and know that you've done a couple of the races and you're not going to sort of bounce off guys or off fences or whatever. So you definitely feels like you kind of have to put in your time a little bit and kind of earn your stripes before you get the opportunities that you really want at the top teams.
So I got to ask the obligatory NASCAR question here would be, you grew up in an area that's sort of near Jeff Gordon, who grew up in Vallejo and, mm-hmm. and obviously, and
yeah, very close.
NASCAR was at Sonoma when you were growing up, or I think it just gotten there.
Yeah, it was always there. Yeah.
Did you have any desire, or did the Jeff Gordon path ever appeal to you as like an option?
Yeah, I mean, it honestly, it didn't, but I think it was just because of, it seems foolish to say that now, knowing what I know now and the respect that I have for the Cup guys. And once I got to see a few of my friends switch from single-seaters or sports cars to NASCAR, you know, like McDowell was a guy that my dad had worked with a number of times. So sort of seeing guys like that I knew and respected and seeing them go there and really see firsthand like how difficult it was and how good a lot of the guys were there was really interesting to see. So, but growing up in a family that ran small formula cars, you know, for a living, that was sort of all you really knew. So it seemed so foreign to sort of switch and go down a path that would have been, you know, sprint cars or whatever. It was like, we didn't know anything about that kind of stuff. But I knew that my dad could help me, you know, understand how to make a single seater formula car go fast. So that's kind of what I knew and what I could lean on to advance my progression or get a leg up on the guys I was racing against, kind of thing. So it just sort of made the most sense at the time. And who knows what would have been different if my dad was knew more about circle track racing than road yeah. course racing. But I think you're just kind of a product of your environment for sure, and that was mine, and it worked for me.
What kind of adjustment is it, Dane, to go to a series where you are splitting time with other drivers in a car? Because it's not like sports cars are exclusive. There are other instances where drivers share cars in other circuits, but predominantly what we know here in North America is IndyCar, right. NASCAR, where it's just, it's one guy. And, you know, you coming up through the ranks was sort of that way. What's it like to just sort of, I guess, rewire your brain and understand, like, it's not just me who's responsible for the fate of this vehicle?
Yeah, for sure. It can be a pretty big change. I think it sort of depends on your attitude to it a little bit, for sure, and maybe whatever your approach was where you were racing. But you really just kind of have to have some compromise and have to have some trust a little bit in your teammate. And yeah, I think you see that sometimes in sports cars that once there's a really good pairing, a lot of times they'll try to sort of stick together as much as they can because they trust each other. They get along. They like the same thing from the race car. And that's so beneficial than having two guys that are different opinions on what they want. Those are a lot of the things you'll see are just kind of one-year things. But like a good example is a lot of the guys at Corvette or like Joey Hand and Dirk Mueller drove together for forever, even with two brands. So those are, again, just sort of two guys that really hit it off, really liked the same thing and got results from it. So to change your whole approach to being, well, it's even all the little things like the seating position, things like that, where you can get so comfortable in a Cup car or an Indy car because you can just have it however you want. You know, it's the seat is made for you, pedals are made for you, you know, nobody undermines anything that you're trying to do,
right?
And then you come to here and you can make your seat and the next guy doesn't fit in it or the pedals are too close. And so I was like, okay, well, that's as far away as I can have it. And the next guy is like, well, okay, it's a little bit close, but as long as it's not any closer, kind of thing. And you end up just making some small compromises here and there and kind of, I guess, maybe letting go of the little things a little bit when it comes to some of that kind of stuff. And then as a whole separate element to the working relationship and making the race car go faster, because now the engineer is going to have two sets of opinions instead of one, or crew chief, whatever you want to call it. You know, two sets of opinions there on one guy's going to say, go do five laps in the car, come in and say, oh, it's so understeery, I can't even drive it. Next guy's going to say, I'm so loose, I'm crashing every lap. And then what's the engineer to do then? So
yeah,
can be really difficult to get onto that same page to make things better, for sure. And like I say, you kind of have to find the right balance between sort of standing up for what you really want and what you really need so that you can perform, and then maybe giving up or flexing a little bit here and there on certain things that aren't bothering you or whatever. But yeah, when you find the right partnership and the right guy to be with, it really can just push the program to the next level.
It certainly seems like you and Juan Pablo Montoya have found that partnership. 3 wins last year, yep. I think, on the way to the championship. Yeah. What is it about JPM? Because I've covered Montoya going back to NASCAR days, and really the kart days. You and he don't seem to have a lot in common, but obviously you have a really good working relationship. How did you know you guys had hit it off, and why do you think it works so well together?
Yeah, I think we just started to have some fun, really, to be honest. he's probably a little bit more brash than I am, and likes to pick on people and have some fun. But for me, I like to enjoy myself too. I mean, if you come here and everything's really serious and you're really miserable all the time, then it's tougher to perform when you're in the car. If you're kind of enjoying yourself and you're surrounding yourself with the right people in a good environment, then things really start to come together a lot easier, I think. And for sure, in the first year in 18, we had maybe a little bit of that where he wanted kind of one thing, I wanted something a little bit different, and we didn't really know each other, had never worked together before, and I had obviously been in this series and had a lot of experience, and he has tons of experience and success in other formulas, so I think maybe a little bit of arguing is the wrong word to say, but just trying to figure out who's actually right kind of thing, and who's going to take maybe charge, or we felt like one of us should take charge kind of thing. And
sure. Just fueling each other out for understanding where the strengths and weaknesses are.
Yeah, I think a little bit of that or whatever. And once we got kind of later into the year and did a couple races, and then we started to just, I think, trust each other a lot more and have good respect for each other, that he can drive the car and be on pole. I can drive the car and be on pole. He can do the last 20 minutes of the race and he's capable of winning. And he started to trust me that I could do the same, and kind of found out that, like, okay, I really like these tracks, I really like those tracks kind of thing. And started, instead of, you know, thinking one of us needed to be in charge of the program, you know, pushing ourselves to be better. And if a guy was really happy one weekend, I was like, hey man, you know, go for it. It's your deal kind of thing. And if it was switched around, then we had no problem going back the other way. So for a guy that makes as much noise as he does, it was really not ego-driven in any way once we kind of got to the middle part of the year. And then we were really strong and just didn't have any results. So once we came in to start a 19, we just had a really good plan, and there was just never any drama between us. It was really, really good and healthy in that way, I guess. So we always wanted to be better as a team and not better as individual guys or whatever, because we wanted to win. And I think he started to understand that, okay, well, we both have to do this together if we're going to win. I can't do all the work and he can't do all the work type of thing. And then we really started to find a better balance for the two of us for the race car as well, I think, with our engineer, you know, same guy over the course of the program. But I think he really started to hone in on what the two of us needed, and finding a better compromise where we were both happier and close to happy as we could be. And that allows you to get the best out of yourself performance-wise, and then, you know, and then it's just easier because there's less fighting over, well, I want the car to go this way, I want the car to go that way kind of thing.
And Juan Pablo certainly seems to have that, really, I think that's why he reached F1. He's got that mentality of being almost like honest to a fault in some ways, which I think is good. It seems like people always know where they stand with Juan Pablo. I presume that's the type of working relationship you like having with a driver.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be. So, and like I said, I think we're just the honesty, and I think you realize that he just kind of wants to have fun and drive race cars, and he's really not into drama and any of that kind of stuff. And
even though it sometimes follows him,
because sometimes he can't bite his tongue, you know, but that kind of makes everybody love him at the same time, you know. So, yeah, we really found a really great way to have fun at the racetrack and become closer, you know, friends even away from the track and things like that kind of thing. So it really kind of came together nicely for sure. And he's got a ton of experience for sure from a lot of different programs that he's been in. And yeah, we've just found a really, really good balance for that.
Do you have a favorite story with him yet, or something he's done or said?
Something
you can tell us publicly, I guess.
Yeah, there's not many.
You have to think through that for a while.
Exactly. Unless you get a bleeper machine on this thing. But, I mean, it's just, he's the right guy. You know, we just really seem to fit well together. And for sure, when you come to a place like Team Penske, I think from the outside, there's maybe this kind of perception in a way that it's, you know, with the black pants and everything and very, very straight, and which it is, and it's very professional. But he's a good guy there just to kind of break the ice every once in a while when it's getting a little stuffy in the room kind of thing, to just have a little joke or make fun of Elio's hair or something like that, just to sort of just to lighten the mood a little bit if things are a little bit tense. He's good, you know, and it's sort of silly and childish and whatever, but it's fun, you know, and I think that kind of helped me get a little bit more comfortable for sure, you know, because I was new to the team and you're trying to find your way, you know, through and all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of good to have the class clown in there a little bit for sure. But most of the favorite stories got to be just, I think when we came, it must have been at the Roar, maybe it was the race, the first year of the program, and Ricky and I are new, and we're trying to be very careful because we're at Penske and we're very excited and we want to be here. And we're trying to.
You guys know, have read all those stories about press pants and shirts.
Like, okay, yeah, we need to stay in the line and in the box and be very careful. And we were somewhere, and Brian Till was mediating something, and Elio and Juan were just going after each other for anything. It's like Juan's after Elio for his coloring his hair, and Elio's after Juan for being, you know, needing to lose weight. And it was just like this back and forth, and Ricky and I are just in the crosshairs of this stuff, just dying as they go after each other, because we didn't know them very well. We'd only been around the two of them for a couple of days at this point, and they've got, you know, 20 years worth of history of together. So that was probably one of the funniest things.
When you got hired at Penske, Dane, did you know you'd be paired with Montoya, or were you guys hired separately, or how does that work?
Yeah, no, it was all kind of separately. I think Juan was the first guy committed to the program, and then I think I was second. And that was funny, and I'll tell the story because I told it at one of our winning toasts at Penske the other day. So I go and I sign my contract with Tim Sindrick in the shop and everything, you know, obviously really exciting, and I kind of hand it back over to him. He says, "So we're going to put you with Montoya." And then I was thinking, did I do something wrong? Is he mad at me? Like, why is he giving me that guy? Like, this is going to be a lot of work. Like, I'm not really sure how this is going to go. But obviously, whether it was just we were the first two guys, so we got stuck together, or if he seemed to think we would go together. Obviously, he kind of split up the IndyCar guys with the sports car guys with Ricky and I. But yeah, I mean, I'm super happy with Juan, and we have a ton of fun. And yeah, but at first I was like, oh, okay, what's happening? Why? How's this all going to go? And I think I was driving home from signing, and Juan called me, and we sort of spoke on the phone for the first time, you know, and had never really met him. And then they were doing a race at Petit. They were doing the last IMSA race of the year, you know, went over and spent some time or whatever. But yeah, at first I wasn't really sure what I was in for, because the guy definitely has a bit of a reputation for sure, from all his stuff. So I was like, oh man, how's this going to go?
It's gone pretty well, I think. Yeah, it's gone really well. So he brings obviously a sterling resume, Dana, and he's got two Indy 500s. You're on a team here at the Rolex with 7 Indianapolis 500 victories among your drivers. You got Pagano now with 1, JPM with 2, Rossi with 1, Elio's got 3. You've got 3 IMSA championships, and I believe, are you the only 3-time champion?
Since the merger.
Since the merger,
yeah,
okay.
Since the merger, yeah.
So you had 2 before you got to Penske. What's that like for you to be, I mean, obviously, the Indianapolis 500 is the biggest race in the world. So when I or other people who don't normally write about IMSA write about Team Penske, we're going to write about those guys. And
sure.
Not as much you, which isn't really fair to you. But how do you handle that?
It's been fun. I mean, I think it's kind of cool for Ricky and I. And Ricky and I have known each other for a long time. We're about the same age. We've been here kind of similar amount of time. And we always really felt sometimes in just conversations like, oh, we kind of feel like sometimes the series is underrated and some of the guys here in the competition were sort of underrated in a way. And it's cool when those guys come because they have such a reputation. They have success in formulas that are a little bit more mainstream than IMSA is. So it's cool to have those guys around, and obviously the draw that they bring and the people that they bring to the races is, you know, not to be underestimated for sure. So it's cool to share a car with those kind of guys, and definitely, you know, when the program is over or whatever, whenever that is, then it'll be definitely really cool to think back when you're done racing or whatever, that you got to share cars and time with those guys that have achieved so much success and that will, you know, no doubt be kind of Hall of Fame and legendary type guys in the future for sure. If not now, you know, because they're old, so just work that in there. But
yeah, you're definitely on the younger side of this equation.
Yeah, it's cool for us. I mean, it's just Ricky and I didn't get those kind of opportunities to go to IndyCar, but now it's really cool to share cars with those guys and kind of prove not only to yourself, I guess, maybe more, but to everybody else as well that, you know, you have caliber and pace to run with some of the, you know, best guys in the world or best guys there ever were, you know. So that's pretty cool, and can help you sleep at night sometimes, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And you mentioned your other teammate there, Ricky Taylor, who is also an overall series champion and a winner of the Rolex 24 as well. So I agree with you. I think that the fact that you guys hold your own with those names that I mentioned, like Pagenaud and Montoya, Rossi, and Castro Neves, it says a lot about both of you.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to argue with the caliber of people that we have over there.
Yeah.
So everybody
yeah.
aside from the two sports car guys, like you say, are Indy 500 winners. So it's a pretty special crowd over there.
And they're all home run hitters.
A lot of bling and rings and
so. Watches everywhere. So you're the only Team Penske IMSA driver who lives in North Carolina, and you're in Huntersville, I think, about 15 miles or so from the shop. How often do you go there, and do you get a chance to interact with the NASCAR or the IndyCar side of Penske very much? Or?
Yeah, I mean, obviously our schedule's a lot more relaxed, only having 10 races compared to, obviously the NASCAR schedule, and then the middle part of the IndyCar can be pretty crazy there with some of their back-to-back races, back-to-back. I spend a ton of time there for sure, just because we have bigger breaks, and with everyone else being remote, a lot of times they're just kind of calls, or we'll do it at the racetrack, some of our meetings and things, just while everybody's there and everything's fresh, because we just, we don't have that Monday morning thing like a Cup team would on their kind of normal schedule. So, I go up, and it's convenient to be there for sure. Anytime there's a seat fit or something, or come see this, come check out that, it's kind of cool to be the guy that's there to come do a lot of that stuff. And a lot of times I'll go up for the meetings and just sit in and do the call from there. And then we can catch up on a few other things that are afterwards on your mind, kind of thing. So I like being there. I didn't move there for the program. I'd moved there a couple of years prior.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Yeah. Like right before I was actually at Action Express, which is also based in North Carolina area, and then went to Penske. So it kind of worked out perfectly for that. But it's cool to be there for sure. It's definitely really, really convenient. But every once in a while you see the guys, obviously they're really busy with the Cup programs and things like that. But a few times, I think Brad, for sure, you've seen him in the back in the sports car shop, just kind of cruising around, just seeing what's in the building and whatever. So it was cool one day he was there and just coming by, and everyone's a racer. They want to see the car, see what's different about from where they normally are. And he was kind of hanging around the car and looking around and asking questions and things like that. So it's cool to share a different type of racing with those kind of guys. And obviously the Penske Games is a whole nother deal where everybody's all together, and that's a ton of fun as well.
Keselowski obviously has that inquisitive nature, so it doesn't surprise me that he would come over and be asking you some questions. I've heard Joseph Newgarden say that as well, that when he would when he lived in the area and would spend time at the shop, he would always go over and see what the NASCAR guys are doing. You've got this team owner who is allowed dabbling, I think, by his drivers in other series. I know Newgarden's been lobbying to maybe run a NASCAR race, and Scott McLaughlin is, I think, lined up for a test.
Right.
And have you ever thought about petitioning Roger or Tim Cindric? Hey, maybe let me try another series sometime.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I mean, make a little bit of noise here and there for sure. You don't want to wear them out with that kind of stuff for sure. And I think they definitely like for everyone to stay focused on their main program and make sure that we're delivering the results that are expected in our division, I guess, if you like. But yeah, I mean, you'd love an opportunity to try anything in the building for sure, because they're all first class programs. You saw the results that the team had overall in 2019 were pretty staggering, really, in a way. So yeah, that you're going to be able to sample one of the best cars of its type, if you get to try something else, for sure. And I drove a K&N West car at that time. One time I did a couple of laps at Sonoma. So that's the only time I ever drove in a stock car. And never did quite get to make the opportunity to try an Indy car. So those are definitely things I'd love to have a go in. And road course races, obviously, a little bit more in my wheelhouse than the oval stuff. But yeah, I'd love to have a go at anything they have, for sure. If they need ever a rose, definitely be first in line.
Yeah, well, you've certainly been immersed in racing all your life. Just want to wrap up here, Danny. I know you mentioned your family has that racing background. I understand your dad is an engineer.
Yep.
For a rival team?
Here. So my uncle was a race car driver. My family's actually from New Zealand originally. So they came to America for motorsport, for all more opportunities that are here than in New Zealand, and started running teams and that. So, but yeah, now my dad's a race engineer, has been for a number of years. But yeah, once I came to prototype full time again in 2015, he was already race engineering for another team, and it was like, okay, I guess I never really thought that this was ever going to happen. Like he was my engineer together one time when I was in a Formula car. So that was fun. So we did have 1 year working together, which was pretty special. And we were able to win the championship together, which was cool. And then we kind of, go your separate ways, and he's there, and engineers can kind of bounce around a little bit as well, like drivers. So you're always in a different place and different category. And it, honestly, it never, ever crossed my mind that that we would be at a place where we'd be competing against each other. But yeah, so here we are. So kind of 5 or 6 years now worth of him being at different prototype teams as a race engineer and myself being a driver. So kind of funny and a little bit less to talk about around the dinner table than we used to when I was a kid growing up and I needed help and had questions for him. Is a little bit less questions and now it's a little bit more of a how are the kids, how's mom, than what are you doing or what'd you learn kind of thing. So but it's cool. Yeah, I mean, obviously got my passion from him and the family, and it's cool to be able to share it still together. And now I see him probably more often at the racetrack than anything else because they still live in California and I live in North Carolina. So we don't go home too often these days, but it's cool to be able to at least bump into him at lunch at the racetracks and we say hi, hello, and that kind of thing.
And that's it.
But yeah, now I get paid to beat my dad for a living.
So I would think though he's immensely proud of you, but you're not going to sit there and trade secrets or anything
not anymore. Not anymore for sure. Like we used to. And it's cool. I mean, he's definitely, it's his job to win races. It's my job to win races. And if his car beats me, then yeah, it's, if I am going to get beat and it's not my teammate car, then that's kind of the next best thing to have them win and happy for him. Cause you know, as a driver in it, you need to have success to maintain a job and maintain a living. And
yeah,
I think the same for him. He's just, you know, just as happy if I can win than anything else, as long as he has an okay day as well. So, and then there's my poor mom stuck in the middle between the two of us. And usually somebody's a little bit unhappy when it comes to the end of the day, whether it's him or I. So, yeah.
And then your wife and kids travel with you as well to the races?
Come to a couple races. Okay. Yeah. Not too many. They're in school. So, a little bit here and there for sure, but maybe three tops.
So sometimes it can be just a full Cameron
family. Usually we'll go to Laguna Seca is one, so it's close to home. So we'll kind of make a trip out of that. My wife has some family in Chicago, so sometimes we do Road America and see some, you know, extended family in Chicago, make a little trip out of it kind of thing. So, not too many. It's, obviously I'm focused on what I have to do on the weekend, and she always complains because I'm not real personable or real social or maybe a little stressed out sometimes on the race weekends, and she doesn't like hanging out with me here when I'm spending too much time at the racetrack and not really worried about them and a little more worried about what I'm doing.
Yeah, you're working. You got a lot going on, and namely is winning your first Rolex 24, which certainly wish you much luck and getting a chance to do
Thank
that
you.
In a few weeks. And thanks for sitting down with you, Dane. Really appreciate it. Enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Our thanks again to Dane Cameron for taking some time out of his busy schedule during the roar before the Rolex 24 test session at Daytona earlier this month. And our thanks as well to David Hovis at Team Penske for setting up this conversation. The Rolex 24 is this weekend at Daytona International Speedway. You can catch all 24 hours of this sports car classic through NBC Sports Group. You can check my social media at Nate Ryan on Twitter for the full breakdown of how to watch the Rolex 24. This endurance race will start and end on NBC, also will be showing on NBCSN and the NBC Sports app during the 24-hour duration. So be sure to check out my Twitter handle, at Nate Ryan, for a full schedule on how to watch the Rolex 24. And we encourage you also to go to Motorsports Talk, NBCSports.com/motors. I'll have daily posts covering the Rolex 24 throughout the week. So be sure to check out NBCSports.com/motors for all of your Rolex 24 coverage. The NASCAR and NBC podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please leave a rating and review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think. That really helps us in spreading the word. And as always, you can send me feedback on Twitter, at Nate Ryan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR and NBC podcast.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.